So, you know, as I said earlier, what a fun day today was. And they look, like I said, I think the Republicans, I think Trump's defenders did a good job of not going on and on and on. And I think, as Sherry said in the last segment, how many, you know, probably because they can't tell the same lie over and over again. It is what it was. But thank you, Jay Sekulow, and all of the Trump defense team for not making me sit through an entire 8 hours of making stuff up. I'm glad you kept it to two. Thank you. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the opening arguments and where things go from here. I've asked Sam Berger to come talk with us. Sam is the Vice President for Democracy and Government Reform over at the Center for American Progress. Sam, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
So, I'm looking at this, and I'm grateful. Hey, it was a good 2 hours. They were done. I was able to go on with my life, but it was kind of redundant. It was kind of the same stuff over and over again, which didn't actually defend Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the strangest parts about this is the fact that hanging over all of this, you have the John Bolton revelations that blow up the core of Trump's impeachment defense. You know, the whole argument is no one knows why he was holding the aide. There's no firsthand account. Therefore, there's nothing you can do. And then you have John Bolton say, oh, I was there. He was holding it up for the very, very reason. Of course, we all know why he was holding it. He was holding it up to get this information on his political opponent. And so, you know, finally, today, Jay Sekulow talked about that fact, but he did so in a way that made it clear that John Bolton has to come in and testify. Because he basically stood there and said, here are all these people that disagree with what John Bolton said. Well, guess what? When we're having a trial, we have a way to figure this out. We bring the people in, and we hear from them firsthand,
yep,
under oath.
In fact, the exact line that I tweeted out that for me is one of those, as I said in the last segment, you know, every lawyer knows there are questions you don't ask if you don't know the answer to, or statements you don't make. He said you cannot impeach a president on unsourced allegations. Well, we have the source. We can call the source. We can have him sit down and say what he meant when he wrote it. This is probably the worst statement of their entire opening argument, in my view.
Oh, I would agree. I mean, I think the only other thing that struck me, I think it was on the first day, where they basically said, you know, why is the House not making our case for us? You know, there's all this evidence. The American people paid good money for that evidence. You know, they should get to see it. I'm thinking, yeah, there's some other evidence that they should also get to see. I mean, it's the absurdity. It's very difficult for a lawyer to go through, you know, to basically argue for a trial with no witnesses and no evidence, because it's just so absurd that kind of you lose track of the fact that, oh, yeah, that's the sort of point I'm making, because the natural rhythm that you have is, you know, they have witnesses, I have witnesses, they have evidence, I have evidence. And so, you know, you see the Trump team keep falling into this trap because, in essence, they're arguing absurdity. You should have a trial that has no witnesses and no evidence.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of remarkable if you stop and you think about it. But again, it, you know, it leads me back to, it's all they have. I mean, because they didn't actually make, in my view, a real defense of Trump doing what he did, which, if you read the transcript, it was very simple. There's a straight line between, you know, you'll get the money when I get my investigation.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of fascinating. The thing that I always think about, you know, imagine if you were making a movie, right, and you have a scene where the first person comes up and they says, hey, I really need help with something, and then the other person says, I'll help you, but do us a favor, though. You wouldn't feel like you needed to provide any more context for your audience to understand what was going on. Right, we would all read that. We'd be like, oh, yeah, the one guy's saying he's only going to help the other guy if he gets the thing he wants.
Yep.
Like, and the
other part of this, Sam, is everyone keeps thinking that the two presidents, Donald Trump and Zelensky, are on equal playing field. They're on an equal level. They're not. You know, I made the analogy of, it's kind of like the difference in power is kind of like the commissioner of Major League Baseball and the guy who runs my kid's local Little League team. That's the difference of power there.
Yeah, well, except the guy who runs your kid's Little League, does he actually need the commissioner of baseball, right? It's sort of like, It's more like if, you know, you're talking, you know, if you need something from somebody, right? Like this aid is critical. The support of the United States is critical. They're in a hot war with Russia, shooting war with Russia.
Right.
You know, and so there's this tremendous pressure, and particularly with a novice president coming in, who's got to establish that credibility. And so, you know, the power dynamics are central to what's going on, and also central to why, you know, Ukraine is sort of saying, keep us out of this. You know, it's sort of like one of the other defenses as well. We keep going back to Ukraine and saying, are you being extorted? Are you being extorted? You know, and they keep saying, oh, no, it's totally fine. Don't worry at all. Just please, you know.
Yeah, please give us the Javelin missiles that we need to defend ourselves,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, just keep giving us the aid and the support. I mean, it's ridiculous. And it's sort of the Trump defense is asking people to check their common sense at the door.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. And again, I keep getting the maggots who keep throwing me, well, there's no established crime here. And I'm going, well, there are crimes here. Bribery is a crime, last time I checked.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The House report actually goes through in detail and outlines two specific crimes. This is the House Judiciary Committee report. It outlines the crime of bribery and honest services fraud, and specifically through the use of wire fraud, because the fraud was committed via the communications, telephone communications between Zelensky and Trump.
Right.
But you have bribery, you have honest services fraud. You have GAO pointing out that the hold itself was illegal. GAO is a nonpartisan government agency that's responsible for monitoring the use of taxpayer dollars. They took a look at the hold and said, you know, this is illegal, and it's clearly illegal. I mean, there aren't criminal penalties attached there, but it is a legal violation. And then, you know, any time you commit a crime and you involve other people in it, you have criminal conspiracy. So you've got a whole range of crimes, not to mention things like campaign finance crimes, because you can't just ask a foreign power to come in and help you win an election. So there's really a range of criminal actions that are encompassed within the abuse of power.
Right.
Right, that in the process of doing this, undertaking this impeachable conduct, engaging in this high crime and misdemeanor, he also engaged in a series of federal crimes.
So the question then becomes, not to your point that, you know, he asked for help, but look, he got away with it in 2016. So, you know, the elections thing is kind of, you know, down the road. But, you know, the folks will then turn around and go, well, why wasn't he charged with that? Why aren't the articles of impeachment going specifically after that? And it's one of those things that I've even asked. I get the obstruction of Congress. Absolutely. There's, you know, 71 cases of asking for documents, all the cases of asking for witnesses and being rebuffed at every turn. But the other, you know, thing isn't abuse of power isn't, you know, the straightforward crime that I think most people or a lot of people want to see.
Yeah, well, I mean, so abuse of power is really at the core of why impeachment, the need for impeachment. That was the thing that the founders were most concerned about. An executive who would abuse his or her power and use it for personal gain, use it to invite foreign influence, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so the title there is really getting at what the House is concerned with, which is impeachable conduct. But in the context, but if you, you know, the title doesn't just say abuse of power, you know, Title II, like it explains why, or Article II, I should say, explains in Article I what that abuse of power looks like. And that description, as someone reads through, is consistent with the crimes of honest services fraud and bribery, because that's basically the conduct that Trump undertook, both violates criminal law and is a high crime and misdemeanor under the Constitution.
Right.
So I think that it's simply a matter of, like, what the House is really talking about and what they're kind of aimed squarely at, because they don't charge people with federal crimes, right? That's the job of the Department of Justice, which, of course, under the Trump administration,
is in the bag.
Yeah.
You're right on there.
So anyway, but I think the key thing here is, you know, this is really bad stuff, right? If you did this, if I did this, if a public official did this, they'd be in serious trouble. And
sure.
In fact, there are thousands of public officials who are charged with exactly this kind of activity, not every year, right, but over the course of, you know, you saw Chris Collins and Duncan Hunter, two of Trump's first two members to publicly endorse him. They've both were indicted and actually pled guilty to abusing public trust, misusing campaign funds, insider trading based on knowledge that they had because of their position. What happened to them? They had to step down, and they're actually going to go to prison. But you know, we know what happens when you violate the public trust. You lose your job.
Right.
We see it happen time and time again. There's no reason that Donald Trump should be above the law.
No, I'm right there with you. But what do you say to the argument that they make that, well, we're so close to an election, Sam. Come on. We're so close to an election. We should just let the voters decide.
Well, the whole issue is that he's trying to cheat in that election.
And that's the simple answer. And I, you know, every time they bring this up, that's what I'm screaming at the TV. That's the answer.
Yeah. I mean, the best way to let voters decide is to get rid of the guy that's trying to cheat in the election and have a fair one. I mean, that's sort of an odd. That's never really made any sense to me, you know, whatsoever, because that's really the core of the problem. He doesn't want to have a fair election. What he's doing is trying to take away people's ability to exercise their vote in a free and fair election.
Yeah.
And we know he keeps doing this. You know, the thing, you know, people focus, and rightly so, on the numerous contacts, the invitation with, you know, Russian...
the emails.
Yeah. Well, and all the various contacts with Russian-linked agents and all of that sort of thing. But also, you know, the inviting of the interference, the utilizing of that interference. But remember, entirely separate from that, his personal attorney is in prison right now because he engaged in campaign. He broke campaign law to try and cheat to help the president win an election. You know, and
we forget about Michael Cohen, don't we?
We forget not just that Michael Cohen is there, but you know,
and Paul Manafort. We forget about both of them.
Yeah, but remember, Michael Cohen worked closely with someone who was named as Individual One, and of course, we don't know who Individual One is, except that we know that he won the presidential election in 2016.
Right.
So we have a pretty good guess at who Individual One is. He's named throughout it, every step of the way, working with Michael Cohen on this stuff. So it's not, you know, this is someone who's repeatedly cheated. If anything, any chance he gets, he cheats. And so this notion that it would be shocking that he would cheat in this election, you know, it's just not credible. Everybody knows who Donald Trump is. He's very upfront.
No, it's true. And one of the arguments that the lawyers made is, you know, at least today, was that, you know, this is a deep policy difference. You know, Donald Trump, you know, has this deep policy knowledge. And I kept hearing him say this, and I'm going, really? Is there anything that Trump really knows deeply? I mean, he doesn't seem like a policy wonk to me. I could be wrong, but he just doesn't seem like the policy wonk type.
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer to that is go investigate the Bidens isn't a policy. Corruption. Right.
Since you brought up the Bidens, though, you know, what's the fixation with them? I mean, if these crimes were there that I'm told, you know, by all of my MAGA friends that are out there, you know, why didn't the Republicans investigate them when they had control of the House for 2 years?
Why didn't they raise it at any point? I mean, the thing is, why did Republicans want to remove the same prosecutor that the Obama-Biden administration did? Because everyone knew he was corrupt.
Right.
He wasn't investigating anything. That was the whole problem. I mean, the thing about it that's weird, it's not just that the claims that Biden was corrupt or misplaced. He was, in fact, fighting corruption. He was making it more likely that this company would come under investigation. He was basically serving as an example of what you're supposed to do when you're given the public trust, which is act on behalf of the public, regardless of its impact on you in your personal capacity or your family or anyone. And so the whole thing has been entirely twisted. It's not a situation in which there's Biden corruption, but exactly the opposite. Biden fighting corruption, regardless, carrying out what's in the national interest, something supported on a bipartisan basis, and not just in the United States, but across the world, because everyone knew that this person was corrupt.
No.
The same person now that Rudy Giuliani is trying to get statements from, that conservatives are lifting up as this hero, because they don't care about any of this. I mean, you know, you heard Pompeo say, who cares? You know, the Americans don't care about Ukraine, or, you know, do you think they care about Ukraine? It's just another tool for them to try and win an election by any means necessary.
No, I absolutely agree with you. But, you know, the Biden thing keeps popping up because, you know, there's some kind of equivalency they want to make. That, you know, because Joe Biden said that you fire the prosecutor or we're going to, you know, hold that $1 billion back. I've had this thrown at me a bunch, and I go, yeah, but what Joe Biden didn't say is, oh, by the way, also, you know, dig up dirt on my political opponent. Do me a favor. You know, he didn't say that. He said, you know, we and the rest of the international community think this guy's corrupt. He's got to go before you can get these reforms moved through, and then you'll get money.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like if you were arrested for robbing a bank, and then your offense was, I had a gun. When the police showed up, they had guns too. Yeah, but they were doing a different thing. You were committing the crime, and they were stopping the crime. You know, and so it's this sort of whataboutism, but it's not even really logical.
Yeah.
It's not trying to make an argument. It's trying to provide an excuse
for
GOP senators to just stand with Trump and you know, violate their oath to the Constitution.
No, you're spot on there. So, you know, overall thoughts of the opening arguments?
Well, I have to say I thought that that the House managers just did an incredible job. You know, it was long, and I imagine that most people didn't watch every single minute of every single hour, but I think they presented an incredibly strong case, and I think in particular Adam Schiff really did a masterful job of bringing home why this matters. And I think in a world in which you had an open-minded jury that was looking kind of even-handedly at the evidence, it wouldn't be any question. You know, that's not what we're dealing with, so it's hard to say, but I think this really drove home the same point again and again, which is that House managers have an incredibly coherent story that's backed up by virtually every piece of evidence that's been collected. And Trump has a sort of hodgepodge of conspiracy theories, outright falsities, and then taking one small thing and trying to say, well, this means that nothing happened in the first place. And then, of course, the final answer, which is, I did it, but who cares?
Yep.
I mean, that's really where this is going. You can see it, because the rest of these arguments just aren't tenable. I think eventually they're going to land on some version of, who's to say it's bad to cheat an election?
And that's the scary. That's what scares me the most, because once we get to that point where we're starting to pick other countries, this is the end of the whole game then. How do you see this playing out as the week goes on? Because, you know, I'm anticipating it to be really close. I think Sherry said a moment ago that the latest poll, 75% of the people in the country want to see witnesses. They want to see John Bolton. How do you see the senators voting over the – I guess it's Friday. How do you see them voting?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to know. I mean, at this point, Friday feels like a long time away from today. You know, so much can happen. I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of pressure on senators to hear from witnesses, at least from John Bolton. But, you know, there's this sort of argument being put forward, well, if the House managers get a witness, then Trump should get a witness. I think, you know, there's a great response, which is, fine, call Mulvaney too then.
Yeah.
Right? Because everybody that the Democrats want to call, they're not sort of like these anti-Trumpers or like political opponents. They're his closest advisors who were involved in everything that happened.
Yep, call people who are on the call.
Yeah, so if he did nothing wrong, he should be really excited to have them all come up and say, oh yeah, it was all perfectly fine.
No, I'm right there
so
with
people
you.
People should ask themselves, why are the folks that are closest to it? Has seen exactly what has happened, that are most likely to know what was in Trump's mind. Why is he fighting so hard for us to hear from them? And we know, in one case, why with Bolton, because he's going to tell us, yeah, he did it.
Yeah.
Interesting question, why he can't seem to find anyone else in his administration willing to come forward and say, oh, no, he did.
Yeah, no one wants to perjure themselves. Good call. I'm hoping it's a 50-50 tie and John Roberts has to cast the deciding vote. That's kind of the intrigue where I want to see it go next.
Well, that would raise a whole host of parliamentary issues too. So I'm more hopeful that there's a crisis of conscience among GOP senators and we actually get to hear from witnesses. But you know, I'm not necessarily holding out hope for that.
Yeah, I'm with you, Sam. I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Good work you guys do. Keep it up. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Good stuff, Sam Berger, Vice President of Government Reform. Again, you know, this is one of those moments where you look at, you know, just how insane this whole process has been. Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around.